everybody. Welcome to a bonus episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast. I tried to say a number, but I remember that there is no number for this one. We're talking about the latest Big Library Read title, which is Reverie by Ryan LaSalla. But first off, it's Adam, joined by Jill. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really excited for this Big Library Read. We've done this, I think, like almost 30 times or something absurd now at this point. Big Library Read is our digital library. It's a global book club that we do as part of Overdrive. And it takes place for this one between November 2nd and November 16th. And if you're joining us for the first time because you saw our podcast on your library's website, we do episodes twice a week where we interview authors and give book recommendations, and you can subscribe at professionalbooknerds.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. But this one is very different than any other Big Library Read we've ever done, because Ryan LaSalla is different than anyone else we've ever had involved in this program. First, do you want to kind of explain what Big Library Read is for people who might be doing this for the first time?
Sure. So Big Library Read is our global ebook club. Libraries who participate, people who use those libraries can go to the website and check out the book. This time it's Reverie. So any wait list or holds, and everyone's reading the same book at the same time, and it's amazing and magical, kind of like Ryan's book. And there's a discussion board, and you can participate in the discussion board and talk about how amazing and magical the book is with other people. It's all good times.
That's 100% accurate. And if you guys want more information about Ryan, if you've never heard of Ryan LaSalla, go to Twitter and just look up his name. And he has, I believe, pinned at the top of his account the video that he made for Big Library Read. It is so delightful. He is just like a very unique human. And then like you said, we have a discussion board, but we're also going to do, we'll have a link in the bio for this when it goes up, but we're going to do like a live Q&A with Ryan in the second week of the program. So for people who read the book in the first week, or you can listen to the audiobook, you can join us, you can sign up for that. It's going to be via Zoom, and we'll ask Ryan a bunch of questions that we might have, but also more importantly, all the questions that readers are going to have, and you're going to have it, because this book is wild and amazing. Mm-hmm. And more than anything, like, if you need to join this Zoom conversation, because Ryan is amazing. He's so funny, and you will have a very, very fantastic time. So, I kind of mentioned our website, but if people want to get a hold of you and I, how can they do that?
They can go to our website, professionalbooknerds.com. From there, they can get all of our social links. We are on Instagram and Twitter at ProBookNerds. You can email us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com.
Yes, you can. So what you're about to listen to is an interview that I did impossibly this year. It was in January in the before times. I met with Ryan at a library event. And so this is going to be a discussion that takes place literally back in January. But it was all about Reverie. So we just thought we would share it again for you guys so you could enjoy it. And then we figured, because we're going to have a live event with him next week, we didn't want to have another podcast where he just talks about the book all over again. So. Anything else you think people should know about?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this very special Big Library Read edition with Ryan LaSalla of the Professional Book Nerds podcast.
Hey, everybody. It's Adam. I am hanging out at the American Library Association Midwinter Meetings, which is a mouthful, and I am joined by Ryan LaSalla, who is a fantasy writer whose debut YA novel, Reverie, was released this past December. It was named a January YA Book Club pick by Barnes & Noble, a Kids Indie Next pick for Winter 2020, an Amazon Best of the Month Editor's pick in December, and one of the best YA sci-fi, fantasy, and horror 2019 picks by Tor.com. That is a lot, Ryan. Congratulations, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. If you want to just keep showering me with like accolades and compliments, I could sit here all day.
I'll be honest. I saw the list of them, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to put a bunch of these in here, because I know it usually makes the authors feel good.
Yeah. Well, I also don't enter a room unless someone shouts all of those things ahead of time.
So it's good and that gentlemen.
Yeah, it's true. I have an announcer that usually precedes me in everywhere.
That yeah. Like an MC. Mm-hmm. Lady, beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you did a great job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then I guess we can continue with the interview. You're not going to walk away. Now you're allowed.
Yeah.
Do you want to kind of kick us off by giving our listeners an introduction to Reverie? Because I don't want to try and do that.
No one does. Reverie is a very hard book to explain. We were just joking about this. Yeah. And welcome to sort of my life trying to get an agent.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to convince them that this book like made sense on paper because... Yeah. It's hard to explain, but the gist of it is that it's about a young queer kid named Kane Montgomery who's growing up sort of alone and by himself in Connecticut, and the book rotates on this, like, fantastical battle that he gets embroiled in between himself and a drag queen sorceress named Posey,
mm-hmm.
And most of the battle takes place in these, like, vast living dreamt worlds called reveries that spring from people's subconscious, and so the book sort of hops through many different worlds, many different genres, and plays a lot with, like, identity and, like, the craft of storytelling and who gets to tell stories and who has power, and there's a lot more to it, but the gist of it is that
it's like a clown car in a good way where like things keep coming just, out and you're like, well, that has to be it.
Yeah,
and
then it's like the Mary Poppins of like the bag of books, just keep pulling things out.
So I don't ever ask authors what inspired you because that's a lazy question to ask people, so I won't do that, but I am curious what came first, like plot, character, world building, what part of this like started as the seed in your brain that became this glorious plant.
So I love this. So Reverie is like a book that I started in high school, and I'm 28 now, so this is about 10 years or so ago, and as a result it's sort of been this like psychic companion of mine for a long time, which means it's kind of hard for me to like pinpoint the beginning of certain things. If I had to, though, it would definitely be character. Ursula is the first person that was ever in the Reverie universe. Yeah. And if anyone's read the book, Ursula is this sort of really jockey type girl. And she's always sort of put in like positions of like battle. She's sort of the bronze of the team. And it was just this image of her battling, like, I think it was, like, giant lizards in, like, a prom dress or something like that. I just love, like, that juxtaposition. But it was also the notion of, like, taking her and putting her into, like, every situation where I wanted a girl in a prom dress to fight back.
Of course.
Just, like, trafficking her through, like, all these different worlds. I wanted the princess to fight back. I wanted the sexy secretary to fight back. And I, like, through her, I got to kind of, like, live this out. And the rest of the book arranges itself around, like, that vehicle.
That's phenomenal. First off, in 2019, you published a book with a character named Ursula.
Yeah, that's like my biggest feat.
Wild.
Yeah.
I can't believe, like, there has been zero Ursulas since the Ursula. Like,
yeah,
I mean, Ursula Le Guin, but again, that's years and years ago.
Right.
It
truly blew my way. The things that I've gotten away with in this book blow my mind. And that's actually one of them that no one talks about. You're the first person
it's
to like
wild.
Point this out to me.
I love it so much.
Thank you.
We were talking earlier about how I was trying, my wife, who is a just massive fan of YA fantasy, this is on her short list of the next books to read, and she hasn't read it yet, so I was trying to explain it to her. And I mentioned, I was like, and then this character Ursula, and I started explaining a scene, and she's like, hold on.
Yeah, she...
Ursula? And I was like, yeah, exactly. So,
thank you.
I have to say, like, the thing... that the world is incredible and the reveries are amazing, we're gonna get to those, but the part that fascinates me the most, like, I have this abject horror of waking up with no memory of things.
Yeah
That is something that, with everything else going on, that's the part that stuck out to me the most. Like, your main character Kane wakes up with just nothing.
Right.
Why, like, is that something you've always kind of had a fear of, or did you just think that would spark a good way to unfold the story?
Well, okay, admittedly, it is a good way to unfold a fantasy because things are being explained to a character as the reader's learning them, so in the same way that, like, Harry Potter is. But the root of that actually has a lot more to do with, like, my own experience is just sort of, like, coming to in worlds where I have to figure out the rules.
Yeah.
Which is a thing that, like, a lot of people that are marginalized just, like, they stumble into something and you really need to figure out who you are based upon, like, that world's perception of you.
Right.
And that's also how dreams feel to people. Like, oftentimes I feel like my most vivid dreams are dreams in which, like, I sort of wake up, like, in the pilot seat of an airplane and I'm flying the plane, and if I second guess that, the plane's gonna crash. And I wanted to emulate, like, that drifting feeling, that sort of, like, senseless feeling, and give that to Kane as sort of the beginning of the book to make sure that, like, even the world itself, even Connecticut, sort of feels like a reverie to him.
Yeah. If this is a book that you're able to fully conjure and create, I'm just imagining what your dreams are like. and I'm jealous.
Yeah, a lot of teeth falling out. That's my that's like
dreams.
Most of my dreams. Yeah,
isn't that a stress dream?
It's a stress dream. It's a stress dream about like not having like control over a lot of things.
Yeah,
but like I think that I'm particularly like not suited for stress because like in it I'm like, well, my teeth are falling out. Like I might as well just like get rid of all of them. Like I lost several. I'm gonna like take the rest out as well. Like I like go crazy with it. Yeah, it's not. Not good, but my dreams tend to be very vivid and very detailed, very like oriented and like narrative as well. So,
are you able to remember them after you wake up, or is this like you have to frantically kind of write stuff down?
They tend to come to me. My dreams sort of build themselves into like my memory, and I'll think of them 2 or 3 days later when something will sort of spark a memory, and I'll be like, wait, why would this be familiar? And it's not familiar at all. It's just because it resembles something that I maybe dreamt like a week or two ago.
I am so jealous of that. I will wake up in the middle of the night and just like. In a fever, write down and my notes in my phone.
I love when people do this. I always ask people to share these with me because I think they're so funny.
I have one that was like 2 weeks ago that I woke up and like the phone's so bright and my wife looks around and be like, what are you doing? It's like 3 in the morning. The one that I wrote was, it just says time traveling serial killer, and then that was all I wrote.
Yes.
And I woke up in the morning and I was like, all right.
And you like knew that it was probably brilliant to you in the
evening. Yeah, it was so good because why would I, like, that's a cool like nugget, but
one of them that I had recently was that, like, someone in a forest, like, finds a fairy who, like, they save a fairy's life. This is a note, and I'll send it to you afterwards. It made no sense. But essentially, it was, like, a person saves a fairy, and the fairy says that, like, they will protect this person forever. And, like, that condition to this person is that they only want to eat quesadillas for the rest of their life, but they're not allowed to die because that's how much they love quesadillas. Like, it was, like, what? Like, why was this, like... And I woke myself up because I was like, I can't let this go.
Yeah.
This is genius. And then, like, the next morning, it was, like, fairy quesadilla leverage, like, life packed. And I was like, this is nuts.
I love the fairy quesadilla simply, like, that. There's your
title. Yeah, yeah.
Good to go.
But I always know that I'm never going to, like, remember it, so I always add way too much detail into these notes. And then I'm like, this is...
See, I don't even do that. I do just the four words, and then I wake up and I'm like...
That's better.
It's not. I don't remember it. It's terrible. Something I really... love about your book is, and I don't even know if you meant to do this, but to me it's like a masterclass of like letting your mind be open to being more creative, and just stay with me, I'll get there.
Yeah.
So it feels to me like Alice falling down the rabbit hole, or like when she's first falling down, she's trying to figure out what's going on, and then she's sort of by the end of the book, she's just like chill and understand what's going on. So like for me, you are thrown into this world where there's a character who not only does Kane not really know what's going on, you as a reader, obviously, at the beginning, don't know what's going on. And then you're just throwing all these elaborate, borderline absurd things, and by the end of it, there's a reverie that is just stuff going on, and it feels comfortable. Like, you're in the world, and you're just, like, you're rolling with it. And for me, as I am also an aspiring writer, like, it feels like it teaches you just to, like, get comfortable with the most absurd ideas, and your reader will get comfortable with it as well.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I think that, like, I mean, teaching people to just accept irreverence.
Yeah.
I think it's part of writing a book of that has to do with, like, dream logic in the first place. And one of the things that I really appreciate is people responding and saying, like, this did feel sort of like the logic of a dream. Like, things do progress in such, like, a specific way. And I think a large part of that is because oftentimes, like, I would start with, like, the kernel or the basic premise of a reverie. But oftentimes, like, based upon the actual actions that that happened, I would twist it like... To sort of respond to what was going on in it.
Yeah.
So a lot of times, and a lot of the things that kind of built into them took me by surprise as I was writing as well.
Also, thank you for answering that because it wasn't a question. I didn't know how to, like, I was like, I was about to say this, and you're like, I guess it's my turn.
It is
to talk
cool
about.
To know that, like, the like, sort of the final moments of it feel, like, comfortable because.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, because you're right. When you're in a, like, when you're in a dream, like, we were just talking about, like, the most absurd things feel normal. And by the end of it, there's, and this doesn't give anything away, but, like, some of your characters are on a what seems like a cruise ship, but they're in space. And you're just like, yeah, that's exactly where cruise ships go. Like, it's no problem. No questions asked.
Right. Well, and I think part of that is also, like, when I was thinking about this, like, this is going to sound totally bananas, but, like, I did have to think to myself, like, oh, let's, like, simplify this a little bit. And, like, this most simple version of space travel, like, I can imagine is, like, we're just going to take what we do on the ocean and we're going to put it in space, just like in The Fifth Element. Like, that's, like, what I had in mind.
Okay. Thank you, because that's what I thought was going
on. Yes, oh, good, I'm glad. Because that's, like, the image that I had, and I was like, I know it's campy, and I know it's a little bit, like, hokey, but, like, ultimately, like, I am painting in bold strokes because there's a whole story that has to go on aside from this, and, like, God bless my editor, because she's the one that's like, Ryan, we need a little bit less from you.
Uh-huh.
Like, and the things that I had to take out of Reverie, like, you would not believe. Like, there's just so much that never made it in, specifically because, like, it did get, I think, to be a little bit, like, brambly.
Yeah.
And so maybe someday I'll use these things.
You should have had a person, yes, I'm telling you what you should have put in your book. Let's hear it. Yeah. You should have had a person, like, have them just be like, and a person with orange hair walks by and just says multipass.
Lou Dallas multipass walks by and she's covered in just strips of, that would be Ursula if she was.
That would be Ursula, and angry about it the whole time.
Angry about it the whole time, yep.
So what would be, like, if you clearly built all these out, but what would be your personal reverie? I'm sure someone else has asked you this before, but I'm curious.
So I've thought about this, as one might do if they're writing a book called Reverie. And my reverie actually is literally that cruise ship that we were just talking about. Yeah. I mean, if you notice in the description of it, Kane even remarks that, like, oh, whoever sort of, like, who's ever mind designed this world, it's conspicuously queer, right?
Yeah.
Like, and it's, like, just full of, like, gay people dancing, and it's a cruise ship in space that's, like, basically what I would imagine, like, my reverie to be, like, if I could just, like, take everybody that I like and sort of put, like, I oftentimes dream about, like, being on, like, the Starship Enterprise.
Uh-huh.
I just love the idea of being on a space station where, like, everything is within reach. Like, it's, like, a giant college campus.
Uh-huh.
My friends all have dorms. I can get to their houses easily. I don't have to, like, take, like, the C train anywhere. Like,
right.
That is, like, my idea of, like, paradise.
Yeah.
And so if I, and then, I mean, putting it in space would also be sort of a prerogative because it's fantasy.
Of course,
but,
yeah, gotta do it.
It would probably be in that realm. Yeah.
So when you were building out these reveries, because as people read, there's a Victorian one, we talked about, there's one in space, there's one in, like, a futuristic dystopia, I suppose we can call
like
it.
An antiquated dystopian futurism.
Yeah, yeah. So I feel like, did you build out each of these worlds entirely and then just say, like, okay, what part of the world am I going to put my characters in? Because, like, you basically, for being a debut novel, you basically put, like, six full-length stories in here that could be actual novels themselves. Like, how did you go about deciding where in those you were going to just throw your characters?
I wish I had a coherent answer for this.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the very simple answer is a lot of times I just decide what, like, bizarre battle I want to put Ursula into, and that sort of her outfit kind of controls the rest of the reverie. But it's also, like, I am someone who is very much, like, I'm, like, pivotally driven by, like, aesthetics and envisioning, and for the most part, like, the things that made it into this book, it's an effort of me to kind of capture, like, the things that I, like, see in my head when I listen to, like, music or just, like, daydream or something like that too. So a lot of these, like, as bizarre as the scenes are, like, they sort of came to me fully formed that way, and then I spent a lot of time, whether it be, like, you know, Ursula battling, or, like, the Dreadmare was, like, a whole thing. A lot of, like, the writing of Reverie was sort of crafting context around things that I wanted to create visually.
Yeah.
And the Reverie's included.
I just feel like it has to be a lot of fun to have, once you establish a world where anything can happen, being able to be as descriptive as possible. Like, even when there is, like, quote-unquote monsters, and it's just like, oh, yeah, this one's covered in diamonds. Like, I just feel like it has to be very freeing as a writer, just to, there are no rules when it comes to what you can throw in there. That just feels like, are for your second novel, which is it set in this world or no?
It's not set in this world, no.
Are you, sorry, we have, one of your publicists is here, and she's also shaking her head no. Yeah.
Margaret's like, shh.
Yeah, you don't have to tell me anything about it, but, like, does it feel more restrictive than writing Reverie?
Absolutely. My second book is not a fantasy, and so can I talk about it? I could talk about it. Okay. My second book is, it's about two, like, ex-boyfriends who are basically trying to, like, reconcile their, like, broken relationship during a competitive arts and crafts competition.
Oh my god, this is amazing.
And it takes place in, like, the world of cosplay. So, like, very fantastical, but, like, in a material sense. Like, they're building, they're in the same way, like, they're building fantasy, but they're building it onto themselves versus, like, building it around them. So, like, a lot of the same themes, a lot of, like, creativity sort of in that, but the restrictions of operating in, like, a material reality for me was, like, so complex and difficult to think through after spending so long in the world of Reverie where I could outsmart really any law of physics because it's, like, dream logic and, like, if I could make it make sense narratively, like, it could happen.
Yeah.
So it's been a struggle. I sort of have the reverse problem of a lot of people where they go into fantasy and they have to think of an entire world where, like, that's what I'm used to doing, that's what I'm good at.
Yeah.
Going and, like, working in, like, a convention center and, like, looking up, like, what's a convention center? Like, and, like, not having that, like, in my mind already was very difficult.
Well, hey, whatever round of edits you're going into, now you can make edit. We're sitting in the convention center.
It's great. I know. As we speak, I'm, like, doing research.
Yeah. Well, also, in the world of, I mean, I feel like you can be pretty free in the world of cosplay. As someone who,
absolutely,
as we talked about, I stalk your social media. I know you're very Very good. I mean, you went as a wardrobe from Beauty and the Beast once. Like, that's,
she's the best character. It's my favorite character from Beauty and the Beast.
She's a murderer.
She's the only character to commit manslaughter in like any Disney movie I can think of.
Yeah. Just like,
do you know what I'm talking? Yeah, she like crushes a man while singing an opera note. Like, that's a gay icon. And I don't think she gets the attention that like she slaughters a man. Yeah. That's incredible. Also, she's like fabulous. And so that's why I was her for
Halloween. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Why the witches?
In Reverie?
Yeah, our main character carries around a book.
Yeah.
The Witches by Roald Dahl.
Yeah.
The darkest of Roald Dahl's books.
Truly.
Is that a book that you were, I mean, you had to be a fan of it, like, growing up, I assume.
But. It's a book that I knew about, but mostly I'm a fan of Angelica Houston, who okay. plays the head witch in that movie, which was one of the most terrifying movies to me as a kid.
Yeah.
In part because consequences, and this is a spoiler for anyone who hasn't read The Witches, like, consequences in that movie and in that book are permanent.
Yeah.
You get turned into a mouse, you do not get to go back. Like,
right.
That to me, like, the permanence of this was, like, mind-boggling in a world of happy endings.
Well, I feel like also when, because I'm of a similar age, I'm a little bit older than you, but I feel like the movies from our childhood were truly, truly dark. Like,
Never Ending Story.
Yes. Forget about it. Ridiculous.
Like the void that like swallows everything.
Darkness or whatever.
That's like an expression of like OCD that like I still like use to like talk about it like all the time.
You watch a horse get just drowned in mud and
it's too depressed to get up.
Yeah, it's just sad.
It's just sad. Too sad.
Fern Gully. I don't know if you remember.
Oh my God, Fern Gully.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Fern Gully, where it's just like, oh, here's a monster made of oil, and it's just I feel like everything. Speaking of mice, I don't know if this is a tangent that I'm probably just going to leave in, but speaking of mice, in Five Will Goes West, they build like a robotic rat.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes.
It's ludicrous.
Yeah, like Watership Down even is like a terrifying
God,
movie. Yeah.
Jesus.
Anyhow, to bring this back to your question, I included The Witches because of the importance that it has for Cain and for his connection to Posey, and Posey very early on touches upon the fact that like Cain is interested in the witches, and in sort of uses it to like indicate to Cain that like, oh, we understand that like in a world full of like heteronormativity, like the most subversive thing that you can be is like someone who's basically like feminine and in control of that, and like is only limited by like their own imagination and their willingness to kind of be who they want to be. And she talks about it in terms of like female archetypes, so like, you know, like the virgin, like the mother, the witch being one that is not defined by a man, which to Posey is very important for kind of how she characterizes herself. Like, she doesn't really have any allies, right?
Right.
And so that's kind of where that came in. But the book itself and like sort of the grimness of all of like the doll books and things of like that era, to me, like, it just left such like a visceral impact on me that
how
I wanted to reference.
Not?
Yeah, it's truly, truly a great thing.
We were talking before, you went on Sarah Ennie's podcast, First Draft, too, I'm also buddies with, and you were discussing living with chronic illness, and I'm curious, does that go into your writing at all? I mean, I imagine it has to kind of play a part of how you're thinking in your writing.
It does and doesn't. It definitely controls how I live and how I operate as a writer, because I have to be very conscious of a whole slew of things that I think people that are not chronically ill probably don't even think about.
Yeah.
Same thing when it comes to like healthcare, things like that. The interesting thing about Reverie and how that intersects with like various things I've learned about myself is that I learned a lot about like my own mental health from writing Cain and from people pointing out things that Cain was doing. Like, I didn't really understand that like I exhibited signs of OCD until I was in edits and someone was like, how come Cain always says things 8 times? And that's because I always do things 8 times.
Right.
Like, and like exhibit, and even like the infinity symbol that's like on the cover, like that's like a tick, that's like a tick that I've had since like I was little. And when I was designing Cain and sort of crafting him around like, you know, portions of my childhood, like he just kind of inherited this whole slew of like reactions to the world.
Yeah.
Reveries being one of them, but also like random like ticks and things like that, that, that I like do to this day.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to kind of discover that through like it reflecting back at me from a character that like I had designed so lovingly, but unknowingly.
Would you say that Cain is the most like you, or is there a little bit of you kind of in everybody in this? Cause they're all very different characters.
Cain is probably the easiest person to like associate with me because he's the main character.
Right.
But if I had to, like, for people that actually know me, I think I'm probably most similar to Posey. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just in, like, the way that I go about myself and, like, the world, and yeah. also just, like, I'm much more bitter than Kane is, uh-huh. and much more, like, contrived. So, I would say that Posey's probably the one that I have the most in common with.
Okay, that might be my favorite answer you could have possibly given, I'll be
yeah,
honest.
She's great.
Can we talk about Twitter for a minute?
Absolutely, we can talk about Twitter.
So, I told
you... Can't we talk about Twitter?
Yeah, don't worry. But I've done enough of Sourcebooks authors. Margaret would yell at me afterwards if I did something wrong. She's not shy about that. I told you before, like, before I even read the book, and honestly, before I think I even knew the book was coming out, like, I discovered you through YA Twitter, which is, like, honestly, I know it gets a lot of sass, but it's, like, my favorite place to be on
the
internet.
I love it.
And I discovered you, and I told you this. You are the, like, one person I've never seen a tweet where I'm like, I hate this. I don't want to look at it anymore. Like, everything you tweet is just perfect. So not only are you incredible, but, like, that's kind of how you got discovered, right, for yeah. everything. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I go into high schools, I feel like I, like, teach the wrong lesson by talking
media.
About this. Yeah, like, be on social media, like, tap dance till someone notices you in Times Square and is like, you're discovered, kid. Like, that was very much like people were like, that's not how you get into publishing. You get yeah. into publishing through, like, querying and, like, this labor of, like, talking to agents and editors and things like that too.
Yeah.
And I tried that and it didn't work for me
right.
at all. And then what did work for me, though, was, like, basically going on Twitter, interacting with people, making friends,
uh-huh.
and, like, being, like, a total idiot on the internet.
Yeah.
And, like, with, I mean, I say that there's a lot of intention behind what I do. Like, uh-huh. I think certain things are very funny. I sort of lean into those. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess I have a persona, but that
you
is,
guess.
I guess. Well, but the thing is, like, but that's not that departed from, like, who I am all the time. Like,
right.
people, like, I'm actually much worse. Like, to all my friends, they're like, this is, like, the bare minimum.
Yeah.
Oh no, is this...
Oh, it's so...
Is
what?
This
oh, your
music video?
The music video. You created a music video
yes.
of your book tour, and it was my favorite thing ever.
Yeah.
That's not even, again, not a question. Just, how do you decide what you want? How do you curate your content?
Well, this is what I'm saying. When, like, people are like, oh, you have this great persona, like, I actually don't have that much of an agenda behind it. Like,
yeah.
this, I didn't think to do until I was, like, doing it.
Yeah.
Like, I was in a bookstore with a friend, Sasha. We were backstage before we were going out, and I happened to have my camera with me, and Sasha is, like, a YouTuber, so she's
yes,
good with a
yeah.
camera, and I was like, oh, do you want to shoot, like, a music video? Because I've been really into this Dua Lipa song recently, and I can't stop imagining myself, like, literally doing, like, the very first frame of this where I, like, pop up.
Uh-huh.
I was like, I just have this image in my mind, and I just want to, like, see if it works. And so we just started filming, and we got, like, enough footage to put a music video together.
There's a guy in the background of the initial shot who's just, like, he for half a second, he looks over, he's like, what's going on?
Yes.
I think my favorite thing about your Twitter is you, more than anyone else, you get the most reactions of people just saying your first name to you as a response. Like, Zoraida Cordova does
yes,
this all the time,
yes,
who I'm
yes.
also buddies with. She'll just pick Ryan.
Can I tell you that my phone now autocorrects my name to just Ryan in all caps? Because it's, like, learned this from people texting me. Because I get so many texts of people just being like, Ryan!
I get those too.
Really?
Yeah.
I assume that's why. I don't know why else. I don't type my name in all caps.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Like, I love your Twitter feed. But, I mean, it is. Like, if you're good on it and you did use it as a way to connect with people and...
Yeah.
You wrote a book because of it, so it's not all bad. In fact, you seem to genuinely enjoy it. So
well, I absolutely love it. I think it's so much fun to, like, talk with people, and I love to entertain and, like, make people laugh. Like, that's
yeah.
always been a huge priority of mine.
Uh-huh.
I think the reason that Twitter worked for me is because, honestly, and we were talking about this before, Referee is a hard book to, like, describe and
mm-hmm.
to summarize, and to sit and, like, really get someone to get it, they have to have so many, like, cultural touchstones already in place.
Yeah.
Like, the pitch for the book was, like, Inception meets RuPaul. Like, if
yeah.
you don't understand how those two things could combine and how could you,
yeah.
right? Like, what are you going to think with that? And so I actually think that publishing pays attention to, like, a certain amount of, like, marketability, and probably was like, oh, well, this person's funny. Like, I'm maybe going to take a second look at, like, this
yeah.
bananas thing that they sent me.
Right.
And it worked.
Yeah.
So.
Well, because I've heard somebody say, I don't know who it was, and it was Phil Stanford we were talking about before, but someone said, like, Twitter and social media is not where people go to buy books, but they go there to discover books. And I think that's where you succeed in spades. It's like, you kind of force people to stop and be like, what is this video of a guy as a pterodactyl? Like, what's going on?
Oh, God.
Sexy pterodactyl was my favorite one. That was before I even read your book, and I was like, I don't know who this sexy pterodactyl guy is, but I gotta see more of this.
It's very funny, because now people, like, it's at a certain point, like, I'll post something, and, like, it'll have, like, people will interact with it, have no idea who it is, and eventually, like, I'll get a text from my agent being like, hey, Ryan, that tweet of yours just hit 1,000 likes, now it's time to plug your book, and I'll be like, oh, right, okay, yeah, sorry, and I'll, like, pop it and be like, hey, if you liked the sexy, like, pterodactyl costume, or, like, this rant about, like, Mrs. Potts, like, please feel free to, like, buy my book. And
it's the equivalent of, like, check out my SoundCloud.
I'm like that person. So
towards the end of our podcast, we asked 9 lighthearted questions that I used to call rapid fire, and then I would get nasty emails from people being like, you get sidetracked, stop calling them rapid fire.
They're not rapid.
I got more emails about this than like anything else I've ever, except for when my co-host loves cats, which will be a part of these questions, and I love dogs. Not the movie. Well, she may love the movie. I don't know.
Oh, never mind. Okay, you lost me.
But I love dogs. She loves cats. Mm-hmm. And I did a whole podcast episode when she was gone about dog books, and I got so much hate. That was the most hate mail.
Cat people have an agenda.
I know. Yeah. I'm aware, and I'm going to get more talking about it now. Absolutely. Every time I do this, it comes back up.
I love cats.
Yeah, okay. We're
going to
get there.
Don't DM me about this.
So these are called the Nerd 9.
Okay.
I like alliteration.
Okay.
First one, what's the last book you finished reading?
Referee by Ryan LaSalle. I just finished the audiobook because I hadn't heard it yet.
Oh my god, that's my favorite answer of all time.
I'm so sorry. That is the truth.
That's good.
It just came out. So
see, this is good. This is good timing for this.
It was really good. It was really good. I really liked it.
Do you have a favorite place to read?
I like to read in windowsills. I found a few like good windowsill spots, like the like ledges and like a few old Connecticut houses. And, like those are I will go through any amount of pain to just stay in that windowsill for as long as possible.
Like a cat. Do you remember the book that made you fall in love with reading as a kid?
I have the reverse answer. I hated The Rainbow Fish with like a vehement like fury for a very long time, and it's sort of like that's what got me into like reading other books.
Yeah. Do you remember the book that you then did enjoy? I love this. I love that someone hates The Rainbow Fish.
Because it's like, it teaches you that if like you're beautiful and glittery and like people envy you, the best thing you can do is literally like disassemble yourself. Like that's, first of all, it's grotesque.
All right, that's fair. I can see that. Okay.
Anyways, the book that probably, Westlandia, I think was probably the best like illustrated book that got me so deeply into like reading.
Yeah.
That's as far back as I can remember.
Okay. If you could travel anywhere that you have not yet been to, where would you go?
I would love to go to Australia. I have been lucky enough to talk to a bunch of people from Australia just because of like book stuff.
Right.
And they are the nicest, sweetest people, and they make things for me. They made me a book sleeve.
Amazing.
And I would love to like go and visit and just like hear their accents and try to imitate them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'd love that.
I think they'd probably kick me out right away, but,
sure.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite holiday to celebrate?
I like the 4th of July a lot. I do. And I think not because I'm like...
That sounded judgmental on my part. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Well, no, I get the reaction because it's a weird holiday to like adore because it's like rah-rah America.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really like it because of that. I just like it because of the timing.
Okay.
It's like a holiday that's like outside. Everybody gets it off and like there's fireworks and I love fireworks.
Okay, that's
fair. I also like cookouts.
That's fair. Okay.
Yeah.
coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Cats or dogs?
Cats the movie.
Yeah. We'll talk about that after we get done recording. Do you have a favorite food?
I like anything crunchy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like
I'm more about consistency. Like, if something has, like, the right mouthfeel, I'm more apt to go with that than anything else. I also don't love... I don't have, like, a big sweet tooth or anything like that.
Yeah.
I'm all for savory.
So more about texture than flavor.
I like chips.
There you go, that works.
Chips is, like, my favorite food group.
And then, last one. If you could have dinner with anybody alive or dead, who would you pick?
My sister.
That's genuinely sweet and adorable. Last question for you. What do you hope readers take away from Reverie?
The best response that I've ever gotten from Reverie and the answer to this question is I hope that they finish the book and feel like they need to create something themselves.
That is fantastic. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. This is such a fun time.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Rakuten Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.